Benny Day. It's a good hour day. What's up, brother? That was your show. That was your show.
It was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Well, you tell me, because you listen to the whole thing.
No, I never listen.
Woke up at 6 o'clock. Make sure you got it all in.
Yeah.
It's really good. We talked to Vern Lundquist.
That is cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, you and I talked to Vern a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
How's he doing? How's our friend doing?
He's doing well. I think he's, you know,
your hair is extra up there today.
Like, is that bad or
good? No, I mean, it's voluminous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, turn around. Look at the boys.
Okay.
Like, see that? That's quite a quaff today. Yeah. Like, I think if you did this every day, it would be like, well, it would be like a well-known look.
Really? Because I try to do the same thing
no,
every
no,
day.
No, no, no. This is a hard departure. No, I'm
really?
I'm telling you, dude. It's a hard departure. It's a little distracting. I'm not going to lie. It's a huge swoop. It's massive.
Do you think this is like a bad idea to do this then?
No, I think it's kind of
it's like a Conan O'Brien thing?
Yeah, it's high up there. I will say this is like, you do have great hair, you know? Like, you and I often debate who has the better hair.
Yeah, no, what a debate it is.
Yeah, it is. It's a debate. A lot of people.
It's two sides. There's two sides, right? Yeah. Two sides.
There are.
Not to that one.
When it comes to you versus me, there aren't many notches on your side of the ledger. And so I'll give you hair. I'll say that you definitely have the better hair.
Yeah.
By the way, I need to tell you this. I didn't want to tell you this yesterday.
What?
So yesterday afternoon, we'll get to sports stuff. I'm walking down Adelaide because I got a meeting. I got a business meeting. I got a big fancy business meeting, right? Sure.
You take lots of meetings, yeah. No, I get it.
So I have a meeting.
Someone was pitching you. Yeah.
I'm walking down Adelaide, and somebody from behind me kicks me in the leg.
Pardon
like
me.
Right in the ankle, like kicks me hard. I assume my initial reaction is that this is some stupid friend of mine that has like grossly overstepped their I don't know, friendliness,
familiarity.
Familiarity. Yeah. They've been way too familiar. They didn't mean to do it that hard, but they actually like kicked me pretty hard. So I'm like kind of turning around expecting to see a friendly face, and I've got my big earmuff headphones on, right? So the world is nothing. It's just, you know, it's just a basically a Griselda soundtrack is all it is. It's like me listening to different artists from Griselda completely in my own world.
I don't know what that is.
I know you're, you know,
is that a band?
Yeah sure. Anyway, I don't want to get into this with you. Anyway, so I turn around expecting to see a friend, and it is a homeless guy.
No way.
Who is yelling at me.
Oh, my God.
And again, he probably yelled at me before, but I couldn't hear him because I've got the noise-canceling headphones. He kicked me hard in the ankles. So I turn around, and now I see this is like a fight-or-flight scenario, right? Like, I'm like, what's happening here? So I take off the headphones, and I'm like, what? You know, the bleep is happening. Like, what is
it?
And he starts spouting off on, like, something about me signaling him or whatever. And I was like, I have no clue what he's talking about, right? Mm-hmm. He's got a big walking stick in his hand, though.
Oh, boy.
So I'm like, I got to watch out for that stick. Right? But I get in close because I'm like, I want to know. I don't want to be at a distance from the stick.
Yeah.
It's like a big walking stick. So I get in close and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing here, man? And by the way, I know I don't want to be seen scrapping a homeless guy in the middle of downtown.
No, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not a guy, as much as you may think of me or as much as my MO might be as like a coward.
Yeah.
And
you see how he said it at the same time?
I am coward in many different respects. But like, if somebody challenges me like that, like I know I will hate myself. Like if it's just a normal person. But in that circumstance, it's also understanding that's literally how you get killed. Like that is how, what you described
is
like the origin story of like, and then he was like stabbed to death in the streets of Toronto.
Which I'm obviously thinking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm eyeing this guy up. I'm asking what's going on. And he's still spouting an alphabet of thing. And then I'm like, again, classic Toronto, though, by the way, where everyone else is like, keep it moving. Nobody look at anything.
Well, they also don't want to die in the middle of the
Toronto
streets.
I understand that there is some self-preservation things, but man, this city, the one thing I will say about living in a big city that is the absolute worst is like, you can be bleeding out in the middle of the road and people will step over you like you're Ty Lue and they're Allen Iverson trying to make sure that they're getting there. They don't want to be involved whatsoever. Nobody wants to be involved in anything else.
Maybe
I get
a TikTok of you they'll take.
Yeah, that's it. Someone might film, be like, oh my God.
Like the final episode
of Seinfeld. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is crazy. Look at this homeless guy beating JD Bunkus to death with a stick. holy crap, what a cool video. I can't wait to see how many views this gets. And it's like 232 yeah. likes. It's like, oh, that was all for nothing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just like, I'm like I said, I had to get in close yeah. because I'm like, I can't have the stick swing at me and yeah. it gets me, right? So I'm standing right next to him. I'm like, I don't even know what, the, you know, I'm angry. Then he
That's
looks at me.
Making me anxious right now.
And he goes, no, he goes, I may have jumped the gun a little bit. This is my bad.
No way.
Yes. I couldn't believe it. And then
no
he walks. And then he just
way.
Like, and then he's just like, I'm sorry. And he like darts
what?
Off.
What?
Yeah. It was nuts. Yeah.
No, that's crazier
that's
than somebody
crazier
kicking,
him kicking me.
Yeah.
Is that he's like, I may have jumped the gun there. I'm sorry. That's my bad. And he just darted away. And I went, oh my God, I can't believe that this just happened. But I'm like, I've got all the adrenaline dump, right, of this thing. And it's just, I don't know where to put that energy.
So what did you
I walked in my meeting, like, probably all sweaty, being like, here's what's going on. And
My God. That's yeah. insane. Because,
I know.
Yeah. That's an area. That's the nightmare one. Because I went out to lunch with my wife, and we walked past a disturbed fellow, like, just screaming nonsense in front of a restaurant, which you like.
That's whatever. That's daily
yeah,
basis
but
down
that's
here. Like,
but, yeah, you just try to avoid, like, contact, eye contact, because, like, you don't want to be involved with that. You don't want to have to, like,
yeah,
respond.
You're a typical Toronto guy. Yeah, I get it. But
well,
yeah.
I mean, what do you...
No,
what
don't stop
like,
and help. Don't offer
oh,
help
yeah, no,
again.
Offer no, help for the guy screaming to himself?
Some
like, call
would,
the
but,
cops?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, that's such an Oakville. You're such an Oakville.
No, but...
Call the police!
No.
Someone's yelling, call the police! Yeah, but anyways, continue.
No, to some, I mean...
Karen. It's like, okay.
No, what would you do in that instance?
I would offer him, I'd say, yeah. sir.
Okay.
Is there
all
any
right,
way
right,
I can
I
assist
see what
you?
We're doing
I'm a small-town
yeah,
guy.
No.
I got small-town heart. I see someone
it's
in trouble.
It's a guy who literally has the worst-case scenario play out in front of him literally a day ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's the scenario that I envision every time. I'm like, yeah. But it doesn't end up happening. I'm probably like... Oh, being overly conscious, like self-conscious for nothing.
Yeah.
But then you tell a story like that, it's like, yeah, that is mind-bending.
Well,
I gotta tell you.
The thing that really, like, so clearly he was able to, like, come to some level of just sanity, right? Oh, he did say, he was like, a lot of people are doing stuff out here right now. And, like, you know, I was like, okay, so obviously something's happened to this guy recently and this sucks. So I was just cool about it. I'm like, what am I going to do? Further escalate this? I actually did have a thought where I was like, hey, when he said I'm sorry, I was like, yeah, you should be sorry. Now I get to kick you in the leg. That's what my brain went to. It's like, I wanted a Rochambeau situation. I wanted my turn at a kick.
You had like the one in a million interaction.
I know. But you know,
that
all I could think of? All I could think of was thank God he didn't hit me from behind with that stick.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
He had a huge, long walking stick.
Yeah, he thought that you had aggrieved him in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted to punish you physically.
He had righteous indignation, like he was in the right. Yeah.
He, in that moment, like until he realized he'd made a mistake, like up until that moment, felt he was so aggrieved that physical contact was warranted.
I think he also understood the score, which was, like, I was not.
That's nerve-wracking.
I wasn't
honestly.
Like walking away, being like, "Oh, I'm afraid." I was like, "Hey,
that's a big part of it."
Yeah, no, he no.
Well,
no,
I also I'm interested in like the physical description of the fellow.
He's about my size, but yeah, like
he's tiny, he's short.
Okay. Anyways, moving on. Sports time.
But yeah, he absolutely. Like, if he's,
that was good. You know what? Good job on you.
So if he was willing to just like out of nowhere kick you in the shins, absolutely willing to out of nowhere bash you in the back of the head with a stick.
Yeah, That's what I'm saying. That's all I could think of later where I was like, poof. It could have been stick to the back of the head.
Yeah.
Scary stuff, man. Scary stuff.
Is that changing how you're going to utilize the headphones walking through the city?
No, not even slight. That dude, you can't let the terrorists win.
I agree.
You can't let the terrorists win.
I agree.
You got to go about your daily life. That's letting the terrorists win.
That is. Although I mean, once I was driving down Jarvis and someone tried to get into my car and ever since I've made sure that car, all the doors are locked at all times.
You let
and
the
all
terrorists
the
win every day. You're exactly like that. You're in your own mental prison.
It's okay.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. Some of us are winners because we can compartmentalize and we still, go about our day. And some of us are chokers.
We're going to play this over your obit. Like, when you can hit by a piano leg in the back of the head in a month.
Piano leg. You just walk around. Okay. So I want to start with a couple of quick Jays things with you. One is your boy Kirk is coming around. That's nice.
Yeah. Just in time for him to become the backup catcher.
Yeah. Just in time. I was actually, before he's actually started to rake, I went, how much pressure is on Danny Jansen to be like Danny Jansen because they really need runs? And it was kind of funny yesterday. They won another baseball game, but two of the three runs they score is, one is the this guy, how do you, it's not Gill. How do you say it?
Hill.
Hill. Yeah. Okay.
Luis Hill.
Hill walks seven batters, I want to say. Mm-hmm. I think he walked seven guys.
He did.
One of the, which was Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, the eight hitter mm-hmm. with the bases loaded, which was quite a thing. He has to throw the 3-2 pitch and he needs a strike and he throws his fastball like so high. I couldn't even believe that the catcher ended up getting it. And then they score a wild pitch mm-hmm. and that's how they get two of their three runs. Kirk drives in one, the insurance extra boy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was kind of funny. They are kind of celebrating this win. And I went, that was Bowman, a horrific out on the base path. It was just very
and Dalton Varsho did not cash what should have been another obvious like given run.
Yeah.
The Yankees were trying to hand the Blue Jays. They were playing to concede the run at third base.
Yeah.
And Blue Jays had four hits.
Okay, but this is my question to you: are you more optimistic about the Blue Jays pitching, which has really the starters have been great? Now the bullpen has been dominant too. Like the bullpen has fully turned it around with guys who are incoming, right? Like last three games, they've pitched 7 2/3. They've given up zero hits, zero walks, and they've got 10 Ks.
Jimmy Garcia looks like the best version of himself, like a guy that we've never seen. And yesterday wasn't that example. He had no strikeouts and he was pitching in contact a little bit, but I don't recall him throwing a lot of 100-mile-an-hour fastballs.
No.
He's
changed something up. I've got infinite. It's funny too, because this is how quick perception can change, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But with Jimmy last year, I really did feel as though he was a great reliever in no leverage situations. Mm-hmm. And then the second there would be leverage, he would scare the crap out of me. Like things would start to get sweaty and I would get nervous and I didn't trust him. He was not high in the trust tree for me.
Yeah. And he's super high now. And Jordan Romano, I think there's been this perception that he's been kind of dicey. He's been one of the best closers in baseball.
No, he's fine. He's just, it's a recency bias thing.
But I will say like, he's not so dominant that he can't not be the closer on this
team.
That
being said, he's coming back as the closer. They've already said so. It's just, to me, the question is, how big is the leash? Like, if he blows one save, two saves?
You have options. Well, I mean, look at Chad Green, who got the job done, and he was the closer, except now he's not the closer.
Yeah,
now
but that's because the other guy was way better than him. Like, it's obvious. You just needed two eyes in your head to see, like, anybody could see that. Like, what do you say? Dogs know it. That one was the simple one. I think the Romano one is actually very interesting. Because wasn't he one of those dudes who is great in
outside
save situations,
save
but
situations.
Outside saves, he sucks?
Stanks. I mean, does that change, though, when you're not the closer? Because he was the closer, and it was like those stats were when he was the closer and he would enter games, even tie games, which is weird. I think, largely just nonsensical weirdness, like noise.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was very strange that his numbers in non-save situations were abysmal, and in save situations, they continued to be great. I think there's a mentality to like losing your job. Like I think the if he is going to be reinstated,
especially for relievers, because you're like, oh, it's like it could be over now.
Yeah,
you know, you lose that job, you lose that.
Yeah, your
spot.
Career might be done.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, what's the precedent for this of a reliever all of a sudden not being good? They're like, oh, just here's a billion examples of it. It could be done.
So if you're going to put him back in that spot, you have to have You have to go back to having a long leash.
What's a long leash?
I mean, I guess I would know it when I see it, but multiple blown saves over a 2-week span, like that would be
bad.
That's
a fair answer. I would know it when I see it, but yeah.
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 No,
because you can't say like, if he blows three saves, it's like, okay, over the course of what time?
Yeah. See, to me, it would be just so much easier to message it as like, hey, Jordan Romano's our closer. When he gets fully back engaged, we're going to just ease him into action. Mm-hmm. And then you just let the Jimmy Garcia thing play out. And then, you know, another couple of weeks with this, and then Jordan Romano looks amazing as the setup guy.
Mm.
You're like, ooh, well, we're not going to mess with this. And, you know, you never know. Pitching injuries, maybe somebody spends some time in the IL, and then you get your shot again as the closer. But I don't, like, do we have to force feed the thing? Like, if it's not broken, if it were me, that's the way I would message it. It's an easier play for Romano. And then if he has success in that role, too, and then Eric Swanson gets pushed down the pecking order, like, why mess with, we know this area of baseball is a very variable thing year to year, that sometimes good relievers turn into bad relievers, to your point. Sometimes good relievers are out of baseball, like within the next couple of years. Maybe this is just like the Jimmy Garcia unbelievable Rolaids relief pitcher of the year season.
Yeah.
And why would you mess with that? If somebody's handing you that on a silver platter, like you're getting this great gift of Jimmy Garcia having this year of all years, who knows? Like, this could sound so stupid in a month.
But you're playing it out. It's fine. This is what we do here. This is what our job is.
But I wouldn't mess with that. Like, I'd see how that goes. Because, yeah, Jordan Romano, I have lots of faith in him, but certainly there's instances where he's a little predictable, right, with the fastball slider or, like, slider.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel way more comfortable with Jimmy Garcia than Jordan Romano.
So I don't agree. I look at this like, think about Baltimore's bullpen, right? It's like they got Cano, who is their best reliever. He's the setup man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got Kimbrel now as their closer.
Yep.
If your life's on the line, who's going in?
Cano.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, I don't know. I just look at this and say, Romano's the closer. And especially since there is, to me anyways, you're looking at the team and saying, hey, what are the strong suits? The bullpen is supposed to be one of them. Mm-hmm. If you have Yimi Garcia, it's not unprecedented that a guy who is an elite arm is the setup man. That's just found money to me. Plus, the other part of it is what you said already. He didn't start the year as the closer, as in Garcia. He started the year as the setup man. He was dominant in that role. You already know you can move him around. You can have him in the other roles, and he can be dominant there. I'm not messing with Romano said. I'm saying you're coming up here. You're supposed to have that swagger. You're supposed to have that attitude. We run the red lights in the Rogers Center.
The biggest argument for it is like, we have the pre-produced thing. We got to figure something out for Jimmy Garcia. Like, what are we going to do for Jimmy?
Bro, correct. Exactly. So I'm running Romano back. But I actually think that you're right about the leash being, you know, when you see it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I know it when I see it is going to come quickly. Because let's play out yesterday's game, for example. Mm-hmm. They finished the ninth inning with it was Judge, right?
Yeah, it was the middle of their lineup.
Mm-hmm. I guess you could make a case that
Judge and Rizzo.
The inning prior was Volpe and Soto still.
No, Soto started the ninth. It was Soto, Judge, and Rizzo started the ninth inning.
Yeah, that might be right. So yeah, in that scenario, Soto, Judge, Rizzo, I wouldn't want to see Romano coming up. I wouldn't want Romano, who, does put guys on, facing Soto to start the game or to finish this game.
Wow.
So that's where it would get kind of interesting out of the gate. It's like there's a lot of pressure on Romano immediately.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
No. So, like, you can message it. You can message it in a way. But, yeah, I would miss the lights. Hey, why can't you do a light show for the eighth inning? Like, you can still do it when Romano comes in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
He's the only reliever that gets
it. No, I don't think so. Anyway, so to go back to what the original question was, are you more confident about the Blue Jays pitching right now or more scared about the lack of hitting?
I am obviously, I'm both, but.
No, you can. This is not the question.
No,
stop changing it. You had your one change into the closer. Yeah, go to two.
I'm more bullish on the pitching than I am scared of the hitting because I'm no longer, and I never really was, afraid of the regression monster. The Kevin Gausman thing has me a little bit worried, but I've seen enough from him, and there's enough reason to believe.
That's the thing that's scary.
Yeah, but like Jose Barrios looks like the best version of himself. He's never had a four-start stretch like this with an ERA just barely over one. Like that's
and I think Kikuchi is at this point real.
Yeah.
Like it's not last year wasn't a flash in the pan.
No.
It's a real thing,
and he's not going to go deep.
No.
But that's what strikeout guys
that's
do.
That's what they
like,
do. Yeah.
That's the way we live. And Chris Bassett has been one of the most consistent starting pitchers over the last half decade.
Yep.
Yep. And he doesn't throw upper 90s, but he throws mid 90s, and he's still been there with the velocity.
He was running it up yesterday too. It was 95.
Yeah, he slices and dices. I love how like his research for his start goes beyond like, hey, what is this pitch? What is this hitter's tendencies? It's like, oh, who's the new hitting coach for the Yankees?
Yeah.
And like, what have their tendencies been this season under this dude? Like, he's a scientist.
Dude, all I want is to have Bassett on the pod.
Yeah,
I know it can't happen. But it's just like, God, I want to talk to him.
You saw his comments to Shai
everything.
Yesterday.
It's every single show he's on, every person he sits down to interview with, that's all you want is athletes who are as thoughtful as you are about the profession or like at least can share their thoughts publicly and not feel like live in fear of reprisal or like they're going to get quote tweeted or it's not going to hamper their game at all. He seems awesome.
Yeah. He is the solution to everything that ails Major League Baseball. Like if we just made all our starting pitchers out of Chris Bassett, I mean, part of that would be like, there'd be more contact because he's not a high strikeout guy.
Well, that's the thing is he's as good as he is there. There's moments where you're like, is this guy good at all? Because he'll put like, yeah, a couple of his starts this season. Yeah. Put like three guys on. He works himself out of a jam with a ground ball.
You look back on the season and the 30-plus starts, and it's like, that was awesome.
But
well
I do
done.
Love that a guy who runs up to 95 in today's day and age, we're like, look at this meatball toss. Yeah. He can't even throw it fast.
I love the comment to Shai. It's like, give me 2 weeks. Give me 3 weeks. I can throw 97, 99. Like, that's, I can do that. I choose not to do that because I like throwing 200 innings, which I did for the first time in my career, but I like starting 30 times. I've been injured before. I know what that feels like. I know what is in the best interest of this team over the course of 162 games. Anyways, as far as the question is concerned, I think we were so afraid of the regression of the starters. We didn't even entertain the possibility that it could get better in the form of like Jose Barrios having a career year and Chris Bassett remaining the same. And like this newfound version of Yusei Kikuchi, the Kevin Gausman things out of who knows, but Yariel Rodriguez being like a thing. And then like,
again, I need to see Yariel more than once, but so far so good.
It doesn't appear afraid of the moment.
No.
And the offense is, it's stanky. Like there's no question that this is a team.
The offense got a bit of a stank to it.
Did you like 162 games of this last year? Because here's 162 more.
Did you like seeing Bo get caught off the base? I went, I was thinking in that moment, I went, maybe 2025 is the year they'll mature on the base pass. I was like, I can't wait till we're writing the articles and reading them. 2025. There's been a real major focus in camp this year. Whatever veteran they've brought in after Justin Turner retires. Like, this should be the year that they stop giving up free outs on the base pass. 2025, this is their year.
The core. Not so much. And I'm not, like, Bo, that's the thing. Like, Bo's off to a horrible start. I don't question Bo. If you're questioning Bo, you haven't been paying attention. Because Bo, at the end of the season, has been Bo each and every single...
Out of all the everyday players, though,
What?
So he's, the only guys, I think, with OPS worse are Varsho.
Yeah, he's off to a slow, a really bad start.
Yeah.
Are you saying you question what
Bo
Bichette
is? No, I'm just saying that, listen, the offense needs you. So
yes.
I don't think that the Jays with this offense can afford the Bo from 2 years ago where he struggled through the entire year and then picked it up for the final, like, month and a half.
Yeah. I mean,
he can't be that streaky.
They've still managed to win games with him being that.
Agree.
Because the pitching is good.
Been getting incredible pitching, flawless pitching. Their bullpen has not put guys on. I'm more bullish about the pitching right now, too, because part of it is Yariel Rodriguez, is that I watched it and went, oh, wow, that actually shores a lot up. Because he comes up and he gets dinged up, and you're looking at Bowden Francis and Yariel Rodriguez not working out, and Kevin Gausman working through some things, and Alec McNoah, like, we're being optimistic now because he's giving up a billion hits to AAA teams. We're like, but at least Danny Jansen, I read his quote after. He's like, he was filling the strike zone. I'm like, with meatballs, with pitches.
So
that they
is
were,
the like coach that throws batting practice. So, that guy is always filling up the zone.
He's filling up the zone. He's really filling up the zone.
So it's like Robinson Cano's dad at the home run derby.
Yeah. So... I actually think that based on what we saw from Bowden Francis in a couple of his starts, I thought he should pitch to Vlad at the home run derby. Like, he throws perfect.
No, Vlad won his home run derby.
Yeah,
we're done with that.
Yeah, so we're done. Anyways, hey, well, at least now, Vlad, you're not worried about him screwing anything up at the All-Star, you know?
There's nothing to screw up.
Yeah, it's already ruined. Oh, what's he going to do? Beat more ground balls into the dirt? Can't have that. Anyways, I'm not worried about Bo, but the pitching. The thing that actually is giving me a little bit more encouragement is the bullpen stuff where I'm like, is Nate Pearson like a usable bullpen guy? Is that possible? Like, they got something. They've been getting something from Tim Mesa the last couple of starts, which is normalizing things. And now I look at that pen where they would potentially inject two guys of that caliber.
The closer in the setup,
man. That's what I'm saying. And like, to this version of Yimmy, and I know it's Jimmy.
No, but like Ross Atkins also calls him Yimmy.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was Jimmy.
I thought we did this.
I just like calling him Yimmy. It's way more fun to say.
You're fine to call him Yimmy because the general manager calls him Yimmy. But that means you're on
wrong.
The side of the general manager.
I don't
want
to be on the side of him. He and I don't usually see eye to eye.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna pass on that. But just think about like Chad Green as your like. Look at any starting pitcher, you run into trouble, and it's like, actually, you know what the nightmare scenario is for this?
What?
Is that the bullpen's so good that they're going to do the thing again in the playoffs, where they're like, well, we got such a good bullpen, we got to pull Barrios after three innings because it doesn't make sense to let him go any further.
Yeah, but they're in the playoffs at that point. And the other thing, like, if I was going to be optimistic about the offense, again, I think Bo is going to be fine, and Vlad, whatever you think of him, and I've been on the record of what I think, and I think this is a guy that, like, you're happy to get an 800 OPS out of. Like, that's kind of, because he did it once outside of the 2021 season, that's who he is.
I just don't know how I feel when he gets up to the dish, and I'm thinking, like, hey, work a good count, maybe get a walk, and that's not where, like, I don't even...
If there ever was a scenario where you needed a ground ball to the left side, you're like, that's your guy.
If that was if that was those game's objective, like if it was like Top Golf and you had to hit it over there, my God, would we be on to something?
Well, and the other thing, though, is like if you just look at the process, Blue Jays can't hit. Like their batting average is bottom five in baseball.
Dude.
But they're fifth in baseball in walks.
Yeah.
Like, they're being walked. And part of that is, okay, yesterday Luis Gil was all over the place. But there is, like, an approach thing
no,
there.
No. That's I believe in that. But can I tell you something?
What?
Did you see Bo's interview where they ask him, Caleb Joseph asked him, what's his most important stat?
Yeah, batting average.
I agree. I'm back on batting average.
Honestly, I don't
disagree.
His
answer, that's when, that means you can get it done when it matters. Like, you can drive a hit.
I don't disagree.
I almost stood up and cheered. It was incredible. Like, average is back. Average is back. Well, average and RBIs. This is where we're landing. Pitcher wins, RBIs. Baseball is back if average and RBIs win, pitcher wins are back.
I don't know how you can discount what batting average is. Yeah. That's like the number of times per plate appearances that you get a hit. Like,
no,
that,
dude.
Hits are still good. Like,
I know. I want this back. I want this back instead of, like, Chris Black's Twitter account telling me that every one of Barrios' starts has sucked. He's like, he sucks, though. I'm like, okay, yeah, no, thanks for the tip.
Is that what he's on?
That's his new thing. His Barrios sucks. I'm like, okay, yeah, good. Yeah, good.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That doesn't sound like Chris Black.
It doesn't sound like him at all. Like, yes, anyways, it's like, yeah, I like the numbers that matter. Average, RBI, wins. I'm back.
Yeah. Well, here, RBIs matter. They tell you what happened.
Yeah, yeah,
the guy drove
in
the runs.
When Bo said that, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek. And
No, but I'm not. Like, that is a thing. Yeah. Like, yeah, getting hits is good.
Well, they need more
good.
Hits. Yeah, they clearly need more hits.
Yeah.
Less walks, more hits.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're going to build the offense entirely out of bases loaded walks, which I don't know. It does feel like we've had multiple games over the last couple of years.
It did feel like the strategy yesterday, too. Like,
well, do you not recall, like, last year, I feel like they were the league leader in bases loaded walks a season ago. It felt like it. They were also, like, historically bad in hitting with the bases loaded last year. Like, they couldn't buy a hit with the bases loaded, and they have the Varsho Grand Slam this year. But yeah, they also had an opportunity to break it open with the bases loaded yesterday, and they had the Kevin Biggio bases loaded in the Bronx and the first road series against the Yankees this season. Hits are important. They're still a very good thing to do offensively, like the most important thing that you can do. And I don't discount it. Blue Jays are bad at it right now.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you can look at they're bad.
I was going to say, I think only one guy has good average, and that's Justin Turner, right?
Sure. You look at their batting average with runners in scoring position.
IKF, 283.
Don't
two free agents
it.
Is like, that's... And
Ernie
Cavan,
Clement.
Obviously,
Ernie Clement is probably still up there, too. Small sample. But their batting average with runners in scoring position is very low, but
Ernie's only 265.
Okay. What a bum. But yeah, their batting average with runners in scoring position is very low, but you can't do the thing that you did last year where it's like, oh, they're hitting like 200 with runners in scoring position, but hitting 265 as a team, so like ultimately those things will be aligned. They're also hitting poorly in all situations. So it kind of matches up what they're doing with runners in scoring position, which wasn't helped by the 1-for-10 yesterday.
It is kind of funny when you look at the team stats, like the OPS and the average, because it's like the two of the three guys with the best stats are IKF and Justin Turner. It's the offseason that everybody kills. It's like the two free agents were actually
Where
fine.
Would they be without
Without
them?
Those two, yeah, that's what
well,
I mean.
Well, Turner especially. Yeah. Like, I just...
No, but it's like
yesterday was a tough day for Justin Turner,
but
like...
He's been incredible. He's the only guy I have real confidence in when he's at the dish. I would say out of the top four guys right now, it goes him number one, and then who's even number two for you?
Kevin Biggio.
Out of the top four supposed to be offensive guys. Like, who... I think it's Bo.
Yeah, it's Bo.
Yeah,
because you're like, eventually he'll be Bo. But the other guys like Vlad and Springer, like by the end of the year, we can be like, well, that's the end. That's the final word on that, right?
Yeah.
For George, it's like, well, the rest of his career is a bit player and no one will ever expect him to reach those heights. And for Vlad, it's like, well, I mean, maybe you can convince somebody.
We're settling on it. Yeah, we're settling
maybe
on it.
Maybe you can convince somebody that 2021 is in there. And boy, you hope if you're visiting a trade option with him. But I think for this market, it will be... I mean, all he's been, outside of that one season, he's been remarkably consistent, like in and around the same OPS each and every year, and in and around 30 home runs.
All I got to say is, yeah, the Jays outfield better be amazing defensively because, yeah, Springer, Varsho, and Kiermaier might combine for how many extra base hits this season. Like, it's just, yeah.
This is why I was so bullish on, and David Schneider's going to play tonight against a lefty, right, in Carlos Rodon. But, yeah. Like.
Well, we'll see. It's like,
yeah, I don't know if his swing bat. Does he throw the fastball, like, up in the zone at all?
I was going to say, there's two things John Schneider loves, and that's saving the bullpen and benching David Schneider.
Those are his favorite two things. I would just say benching guys after big games. Day after the Grand Slam, Dalton Varsho.
Here's your reward.
You get to eat sunflowers. Watch us play. Yeah. Watch how it's really done. Anyways, I'd be erring on the side of more offense when filling out the lineup card. And if Kevin Kiermaier's not the guy offensively that he was last year, which kind of makes sense, you know, he's mid-30s and that was like a career year offensively for him, you got to play only one of he and Dalton Varsho per game, even against righties. So that means more David Schneider or Kevin Biggio in left field or whatever. Whatever best offensive lineup you can trot out there. And maybe it means Aurelvis Martinez sooner than later. Addison Barger, both of those guys are off to good starts in AAA.
Yeah. Not sure they need a Daniel Vogelbach.
It would be cool if like he could play a position. Yeah. Like even like left. Oh, God. Can you imagine Daniel Vogelbach in left field? But yeah, like they need, like even Spencer Horwitz has played left field. Like somewhere. It's like the full-time only DH. Can't even really play first base.
Yeah.
When your best hitter is also that. Yeah, this team's best look is with Justin Turner at third base, but if you think all his bones are going to disintegrate if you put him out there too often, I understand it.
I will say this. This is the only thing that really still does scare me about the Votto thing. It's like, why would they have put Vogelbach there if they ever thought that this guy could end up showing up ever?
Yeah, it's because money in, money easiest, out.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just like, no, it doesn't make any sense because he gets his $2 million
now. We heard he was hitting off a tee a couple of days ago. It was supposed to be one day out of the Grapefruit League lineup and back in the next day. He hasn't played in an extended spring game.
This is the thing. He's 40. You get hurt, you stay hurt. You're not getting better.
How's your ankle after it was smashed yesterday?
It's actually fine, but but it's like the Louis C.K. joke. Oh, I went to go see the doctor about my knee. He's like, oh, it's just crappy now.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. It's like, well, how do we fix it? He's like, what do you mean fix it? It's done. It's the same thing with Joey Votto, I think. Okay, before we pivot, because I got a Scottie Scheffler-inspired theme for you. Aaron Judge, going in yesterday, had 7 home runs in his last 7 starts against the Blue Jays. He put up a historic number here. He's been a Blue Jays killer. He's been the face of the New York Yankees now for... A decade, right? Like, it's been close to a decade in Major League Baseball.
He hit free agency, right?
So why do you think he's not more hated? I have some theories, but it doesn't seem like Aaron Judge, you know, normally you're the face of the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
You're hated. Like, people hated Derek Jeter, right?
You know why?
What? So, tell me your theory.
He had 5 World Series
wins. But I think it's more than that, but yes,
I think that's a big part of it is like... Aaron Judge has never played in a World Series before. They've been in the postseason. They've gone to Game 7s of the American League Championship Series. But, like, he's...
But still, he's not hated in Toronto either. Like, it's just, you know...
No, that's what I mean, though. Yeah. Because you're like, okay, we're afraid of this guy because he's their best hitter. But, like, how good is that team? Like, they've won the division and they finished with 82 wins last year. This has not been a dominant Yankees franchise in Aaron Judge's tenure there. Also, he's like just has like kind of a goofy looking face. Like, he's also just like a physical freak, and he seems like a nice enough guy. But I think the number one reason is just the Yankees haven't been dominant with him. They haven't been good.
Like people hated Brett Gardner here. Like, you know, people hated Brett Gardner. He wasn't Mr. Championship.
He was of that. I mean, he had a championship, right? Like, he was of that generation of Yankees. Like, he's been now retired for, what, 2-3 years? I think that the Yankees aren't good enough to hate anybody with any extreme prejudice outside of Gerrit Cole, but for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I guess Gardner did go back far enough where they would have had one. But, like, I'm basically just trying to think about how Yankees that weren't exactly... Like, Jeter, I understand it. What your point is that, like, this guy was so dominant that, of course, he ends up getting hated. Whereas this guy hasn't been. But no, this is arguably, like, There's a secondary part of this question because I want to ask you, the Scottie Scheffler themed question is, which athlete has the largest gap? Mm-hmm. Who is the number one athlete in their sport that has the largest gap between them and number two? Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, the answer was obviously Shohei when he was pitching, right? Mm-hmm. In baseball, like, yeah. He's clearly the guy because he can do the two things. Like, we look at the WAR, it's a simple one. But it got me thinking, like, who is that actually now in baseball? Then there's got to be at least a case for Aaron Judge. Like, who's the best player in baseball? Aaron Judge gets the case?
Sure, yeah. I think my default answer would be Mookie Betts right now.
Okay, because now he can play shortstop too?
Yeah, and just, he's so reliable, and he does many different things.
Okay.
And no, to me, it's Mookie. He has the bona fides too. He's been an MVP before. Like, I don't think it's not at all like a Scottie Scheffler situation. I don't think there's any separation at the top. It could be multiple different dudes.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying like who I'm just saying who is the actual number one guy.
Yeah, it could be Aaron Judge.
It could be Aaron Judge. He might be the best player in baseball right now, has an MVP, is on the New York Yankees, has killed the Blue Jays over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And yet it doesn't feel like when he shows up here, like anybody is like, oh, boo him, boo him. It's certainly not like, again, A-Rod was a villain. So when he was getting booed at the dish every single time he was here, it's hard
also
to.
Also a World Series champion.
Yeah, hard to kind of compare it, but it's just here's my theory. It's part of that, partially that, but it's also partially he's been in series against bigger villains. Like, we hate the Astros more than we hate Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. They were actually the baby face in that Astros series. Like, the Astros cheated them. Like, Altuve wore the wire in the biggest moment against Aaron Judge and the Yankees, and there's something about them actually getting cheated that makes me dislike Jose Altuve more. Like, the biggest villains in this era now are those guys.
Yeah,
they're Altuve and Bregman and they're the other guys, and so Judge doesn't catch that same heat. If the Astros didn't exist, I think we would hate Judge a lot more.
Yeah, I think we're parsing a little bit, but we're making the same point. It's like, yeah, I guess you're making a slightly different one. There's more hateable guys than Aaron Judge. He just doesn't have that hateable face. And like,
yeah, I think that's part of it too. He's just like likable.
Yeah,
like, he's a big, nice, likable guy.
Yeah, but let's see how likable he is after like rattling off three straight World Series, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no, I think the winning thing is it. It's like, no, the Yankees as a whole are not scary right now. Like, I know they're off to a great start.
This Yankees team's pretty scary. I thought to myself, Jay's got their win in this series. Nice.
Okay, and they've won 7 consecutive series in Toronto, weirdly. Yeah. But, like, that again, last year they won 82 games. This has not been a dominant Yankee team.
Sure.
Right? And they won 100 games 2 seasons ago, but that was, like, they were an awful, awful team in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. I view this generation of Yankees teams, it's like, you know, broken down Giancarlo Stanton and, Aaron Judge for, like, the half a season that he plays unless he's in a free agent year where he plays all the games. It's like, and then Gerrit Cole. It's like, it's not that scary. Like, they just haven't been the same dominant team that Derek Jeter played on, where it was like every year they were a threat to win the World Series, and it had 5 of them. Like, and you're just used to it's like you hated them because you respected the hell out of them because every time they came into your building, and that was also part of an era of Blue Jays baseball that wasn't so great. So, like, you had to gin up some excitement.
Yeah, I wish I didn't just compare them to Jeter because I understand the dichotomy between the two, like, you know, dominant franchise versus non-dominant. I'm just still saying that, like, you're the visiting team. You're the Yankees. You come to Toronto. I expect us to hate you. And that has happened, and there's always been a Yankee that we've hated. And I feel like people would go, I hate Giancarlo Stanton more than they hate Aaron Judge from a Blue Jays fan standpoint. And
that's
yet, it's like Yankees fans hate their own guy. Like, they hate Giancarlo Stanton. And Jays fans hate Gerrit Cole, right? They haven't won anything with Gerrit Cole. And yes, he's had some personal animus and some rivalries with their guys.
That's the Alec Manoa of it.
Sure. And also Josh Donaldson. And, you know, like, he goes back. And he was also on those Astros teams.
Yes.
So there is a piece of it, too.
Yeah.
But, Judge just feels like people go and they're like, I want to see Aaron Judge. I like Aaron Judge. You're like, why? Where's 99? And he's a
even
monster.
Even John Fisher, the A's owner, is like, hey, who doesn't want to see Aaron Judge my team into sand?
Yeah, that's it. So I just, I was kind of sitting there thinking, like, there's got to be, I don't think that there's just one reason for anything, but I do think that this one, it's layered, and part of it is the Astros, part of it is the winning, part of it is that he's just like a big, smiley, likable guy.
That's it.
Like, he kills you with kindness. You're like, ooh, cool. Aaron Judge hit another 2 home runs and we lost.
I remember.
Jays don't beat them. Like, that's the thing, too, is you can say all that stuff about how the Yankees aren't scary. They own the Jays. Like, they come and mollywop the Jays every single time when they come to the Rogers Center. Mm-hmm. Like,
it hasn't been the same case in New York.
No,
right?
But it's every time they come here. Trust me, I go to a lot of these series, and that was the same way when they came here last time.
Well, I said 7 consecutive series the Yankees have won in Toronto.
Yeah, and I will tell you, this Yankees team does feel different. Like, them going Volpe, Soto, Judge, Yeah.
Well, Volpe, like, oh, what a tough little debut into the major leagues where he hit 20-plus home runs and played the hardest position you can play in the game. And
I think that's actually one of the hardest positions you can play, like, if you're on a team, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
Being there for the Yankees.
Not directly the next guy after Jeter, but playing Jeter's position.
That's actually a good segment. It's like, what is the hard, like, who's the hardest shoes to fill constantly?
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be up there in sports.
Being the shortstop for the Yankees has got to be, like, in terms of the most pressure that you can face in a job.
Oh, you'll be mad at me for this, but yeah, results would also play into this. Like, being the guy that took over after Sir Alex Ferguson, because there have been so many, and he was so good, and Manchester United was so good for so long. Yeah. And, like, David Moyes, and, like, oh, there's so many flameouts, and that, it hasn't worked out for anybody. Yeah. I guess now it would be, like, there's nowhere to go but up, so, like, maybe it's good, but, yeah. No, I think the shortstop Yankees thing is a real thing. But yeah, him being now this guy that's going to hit 300 and play great defense at that position. And the ideal scenario for being optimistic about the Blue Jays offense would be opposing pitchers being terrified of the middle of the order. Mm-hmm. But that would require Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being a power threat.
So
but what you have in New York is like, okay, there's maybe only two guys you got a game plan for, but you got a game plan for Juan Soto and Aaron Judge who can win you a game, multiple games a week.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I don't want to turn this into like a Vlad shoot, but it is so funny watching Soto take pitches and the difference I feel about it versus like Vladdy taking pitches and the difference I feel about it. Like, both guys trying to essentially do the same things where they're like, oh, I'm going to work a count, but Soto's setting it up to try to put one in the seats.
Correct.
And Vlad's setting it up to be like, walk me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, Soto taking walks because it's clear the opposing pitcher is terrified.
No, I know. That's what I mean. Yeah.
And then even like,
the
confidence, okay,
though, every time for him to be like, yep, I'm taking the first pitch. Throw me a strike. I dare you.
Well, and then like against Chris Bassett, you can be like, oh, I took two borderline pitches. Those are strikes, 0-2. And then I turn on another strike that's like in the top of the zone that in any other ballpark, any other climactic region would have left the ballpark. Yeah. And we can, me and Chris Bassett can have a
field
laugh.
For Bassett yesterday, two of them where I was like, ooh, let's.
Man, that's Rogers Center, baby.
Yeah.
I remember one of the conversations
they put in a force field. That was the thing. They were like, we can't put these posts in the dirt because of Taylor Swift, but we can create a force field that is going to knock down home runs.
I'm old.
Turn
enough.
On the force field.
Yeah. I'm old enough to remember when Chris Bassett, the signing took place and people looked at the ballparks that he had pitched in and how different it was going to be in the American League East and in the Rogers Center, this bandbox of a park, and him being like, I'm a ground ball pitcher. I think that actually benefits me. Well, turns out it's not a bandbox anyways.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Not a bandbox at all. It's the opposite. It's the new,
it's new Petco.
It's new Petco, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway. Petco, Safeco, Rogers Co. they're all together. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters. Is he the athlete with the biggest gap between him and the next guy? Next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So I said it. Scottie Scheffler wins the Masters.
Yeah, that was kind of boring.
Yeah, he's dominant.
He's a boring fella.
I said this to Michael Collins, I'll say it to you, is I don't really see the huge gap in boring between Scottie Scheffler and any other professional golfer that isn't Brooks Koepka.
Like, that's true. But yeah, like the last guy we saw that had the potential to be this dominant was, I mean, his, I guess, public persona. I mean, what he's doing is like Tiger-like.
No, but you know, like I think that we are kind of being a little dismissive of Rory. And even again, Collins brought him up and was like, "No, man, his best A game is better than Scottie Scheffler's A game."
Man.
And he did rip off a run. Like he got.
Dude, I was looking at the Jordan Spieth run at 21 years old. He won two majors in 2015, including the Masters. Finished T2 and like T4 that year. And then finished T2 the next year. And he was, again, like 21 years old.
But no one's been more analytics than Scottie Scheffler. Like, no one's been more the, hey, you should look at these stats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stats I didn't really even know existed in golf until Scottie Scheffler are now being propagated pretty regularly because of his success.
All I know is that I'm not rooting for him. That's the difference.
I actually am. I am now because here's the thing. There's not too many sports where I get to root for the greatest guy. Like, I looked across this, and I went, you know, I put together a list of who are all the best players in all the respective sports. I learned who—do you know who Yannick Skinner is?
No.
Yeah, correct. He's a tennis player, apparently. Devang told me. He's the best tennis
Sinner.
Player. Oh, whoops. Yeah, my bad.
It's like, yeah, is that Jeff Skinner. Skinner's
yeah.
brother?
No, I wrote Skinner. Quick edit, Sinner. Yeah, got it. So you know him?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He's good, apparently.
Yeah,
he's number one.
That's good. Okay, give me Carlos Alcaraz in a vacuum.
So, but this is what I'm saying. Hey, guess what? This concludes all tennis talk for, I would say, the next 4 years on the show. There's no gap between any of the top tennis people. Like, it's just.
I mean, Djokovic is still there. And
yeah, that's what I'm
saying. A couple
of
years ago,
so,
maybe.
But no, Scheffler right now, he's got 80 weeks in a row ranked as world's number one golfer.
Mm-hmm.
He has zero rounds under par on the PGA Tour this year, and he's got 3 wins now. Mm-hmm. He's the fastest 2 Masters since 34, 36, which is pretty damn impressive. Like, you go through the list of what he's doing, and also just the way that I felt watching Master Sunday, where it was, hey, this guy's got 1 stroke lead. He's plus 105, not even great odds. And I pounded it going, this is amazing value to me. Like, that feeling, the feeling of when he birdied 9 and going, oh, it's over, it's done.
That was the moment.
Okay, for sure. But what I'm saying is, do you think right now he is the number one guy in terms of he's the best, and the gap between he and the next best guy is the largest? Or if not, who is it in their major sport?
I mean,
don't say esports something. I'm talking about.
No.
Don't get cute with this.
I'm not getting cute.
You are.
With
I can
it.
Already see your face. You're going to ruin the segment.
You want me to answer honestly or not?
Go ahead. Ruin it. Just ruin it.
It's Leo Messi in MLS because he's playing with plumbers.
I'm saying it's professional soccer is one big
thing. It's not a league?
No, it's not a league. It's professional soccer.
Oh, well, then, yeah, there's no question.
Yeah. So there's no question? Okay.
There's if you're going to go, hey, the best overall player?
It's Patrick Mahomes.
I guess.
No, it's 100% Patrick Mahomes.
Sure, when it's all said and done, but there's no statistic. Yes. Like, it's not other than, playoff record, which is, I guess, the most important statistic. Yeah.
Out of the 4 major sports, NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, no player other than Patrick Mahomes has won the championship MVP award 3 times in their first 7 seasons.
Yeah, he's 15-3 in the postseason.
Yeah, which is more wins than Peyton Manning has in his entire career in the postseason. And actually, through his first 6 seasons as a starter, he's got more playoff wins and AFC titles than Tom Brady did. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Mahomes now, even with a team that was this year, I think, pretty dreadful offensively, didn't really have anything, you still felt like he was the world's most dangerous man. And at this point, I think he has cemented himself as, far and away better than, who's the number 2 quarterback?
Yeah.
Joe Burrow when he's healthy? Get out of here. You know, there's no football player that comes remotely close in value to the guy that wins every single season. So I think it's Mahomes 1, but I think it's Scheffler 2. Let me run down the rest of the list, because let's see if we can get a top 3. NBA right now is Jokic.
Yeah, it has to be. He's going to win his third MVP in 4 years.
But I do think that...
Might have been 4 straight.
I do think that Luka has closed the gap between the 2 of these guys.
Also, you need to win more than 1 championship, too, to have this.
Kind of, but you've got 3 straight MVPs, and now looking back on not winning more championships, it's like he never had Jamal Murray. He's kind of playing with a bum squad every single year and making them all better. Makes everyone around him better. I do think that Luka has closed the gap. And I know a lot of people are going to vote for Shea to be, number 2. But I think, to me, clearly the best 3 players on planet Earth in the NBA are 1, Jokic, and then 1B, 2C, or 1C, Giannis Antetokounmpo, those 3 guys in some particular order. I don't know if the gap is gargantuan. Anyway, MLB, we already went over this. We couldn't land on the same guy. I think it's Judge. You think it's Mookie Betts.
When you outlaid this and the way you phrased it was which athlete in pro sports is furthest ahead of their peers, I thought we could take an individual statistic. That's why I was
No. I meant who's
Austin
the top
Matthews
dog?
is not unquestionably the best player in the NHL, but he's the best goal scorer.
Yeah, no,
there's just no question.
I know, that's later in the show. That's without you here. You don't get to be a part of that.
I have to leave. I was going to say in Major League Baseball, nobody's better at getting on base than Juan Soto.
Yeah.
Since he made his debut, is 655 walks.
Yeah.
Most in baseball. Bryce Harper is 2nd. He's 144 back of Juan Soto.
That's
plus
wild.
He hits the home runs, but nobody is better at just not making an out.
Yeah.
It's just him and everybody else. It's not close. Juan
I gotta
Soto.
Say, so I think I mentioned this to you. I feel like my dumb guy brain was good for betting the Masters, because I looked at it and I was like, Scottie Scheffler's plus 105, he's already won. It's going to be down to him and Morikawa. And I'm getting plus 105 for basically a heads-up match where I get the better guy who has a 1-stroke lead. And all my golf buddies are like, well, the thing is about Augusta. And they're like, and the thing is about Max Homa's ball striking as well. And and his short game, and here's the thing about it. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to bet Scottie Scheffler, right? Like, that's what I'm going to do, and I end up winning. I kind of feel the same way when it comes to baseball, where every baseball guy, I said, Jay should trade Vlad for Soto for 1 year, 2 years of Vlad for Soto. And all the baseball guys are like, that doesn't really make any sense when it comes to the control and the blah, 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 blah. And it's like, what? Like, you know what I would love right now is instead of Vlad, it was Juan Soto. Like, my God.
If cross that bridge. I mean, you're not going to have Vlad next season anyways if it doesn't go well.
It's insane that that was so pushed back. And, like, now still to this day, I guarantee you ask anybody, like, in the baseball sphere, then they're like, no, you would never do that. And I'm like, well, then they should make me GM because I would actually be the cutting edge. I would make really bad moves, but I would do stuff like that where I wouldn't care so much about control and I would just get, you know, the better players. People would love me as GM.
You know I agree with that take because it was mine and you stole it from me. But
no, it's not true, but that's okay. Anyways, so UFC, the best right now, pound for pound, is Islam Makhachev, but he almost lost to a guy that was a weight class below him. And then he starched him in the follow-up fight, but I don't think Volk was ready for it. But it's hard for me to say, like, the gap between him and all of his peers is monumental. Like, Alex Pereira is going to try to go fight his third weight class. And I'm like, damn, if you win that, like, aren't you the pound for pound guy? I don't know. And then soccer, we went over this, is like, I asked 10 soccer guys. They all gave me multiple different answers. Mbappe was the consensus one.
I mean, if you're talking about MLS, it's like, Messi. Because, like, Inter Miami, I'm not a huge MLS guy, but I know they were rancid.
Yeah.
They were literally the worst team in MLS.
Yeah.
He shows up, he scores every game, and they're, like, good now. And, he's playing against plumbers. Like, he's still Leo Messi. He was the best player at the World Cup, which was not like 100 years ago, and now he's playing in, what, the sixth best league in the world? He's the best by a factor of a million.
Yeah, you know, Armin's telling me the text line's blown up for Max Verstappen. I'm sorry, I'm never going to give a guy the car. Yeah, like, if Max Verstappen goes and drives, like, a different vehicle, I don't...
Why don't we have at least, like, one race where it's, like, everybody drives the exact same car?
Yeah.
Because everybody would be embarrassed? Like, or they'd be too afraid?
If they put him in the Williams car, you think Max Verstappen were like, whoa, like...
Everybody has to drive the same car.
Yes. Do I think he's the best?
Yes.
Absolutely. Do I think that... But it's just so funny because we just did this whole thing with Lewis Hamilton when he had the most dominant car. Like, he's the best driver in F1 history.
It's like now does he stink?
And it's like, oh, I guess he sucks now. He's just completely washed up. And
Daniel Ricciardo is like, he can't get in a car anymore.
I mean,
it's like, that was the best guy.
Yeah, no,
he's winning Monaco.
I'm not doing that. All due respect to Max. Think he's the best. Uh-huh. I'm just, I can't
fellow
give you
frat,
like,
flat brim hat
if you want to say which is the most dominant, like, car at the top, like,
yeah,
the
Sergio Perez is also the second most dominant.
Most dominant team. I would be like, right now, they've ruined it. Because they had this real moment where it was like, oh my God, we're all going to watch F1. And then Red Bull was like, don't bother. Don't worry about it. Yeah. There's nothing funnier than that. Like, we got the best finish to a season ever. And then Drive to Survive, I couldn't wait for it. We finally get in. It's Toto. And he's like, they've got the target on their back now. And he's like, we'll see about next year. And then it's just,
we will
kick their crap out of you. This is not even close.
We have seen.
I think number three is Connor McDavid. I do. I like, what's funny is I'm about to do my NHL All-Star ballot with Haley Salvian, who's a voter, and I'm going to try to make the case for her. I mean this in my deep heart. I do not have the heart winner this year being Connor McDavid, but I actually think part of it is that this is the first year where you can kind of be like, oh, you know, there's some holes in the argument, and he still just had 100 assists yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the best player in hockey, and like, I think that the gap between him and the next guy in McKinnon. Matthews.
That's one you don't even need to make a statistical case
for. That's what I mean.
It's like, watch the game.
Yeah, if we're being real about this, like, if we're all being honest, I don't care how many goals Matthews has compared to McDavid. Mm-hmm. Like, if your life is on the line, you could have one guy in hockey. It's like, there's a no doubt, no brainer. I actually think that there's a pretty strong case he's number two, even against Scottie Scheffler. Like, I was thinking about it where I was like, if I could have one hockey player with my life on the line, wouldn't I pick McDavid over the next guy more so than I would be like Scheffler versus getting, say, sucks now, but.
I don't know. I guess it's weird because you're talking about individual sports over team sports. You're more guaranteed to win something with Scottie Scheffler than you are with Connor McDavid, who hasn't notably won.
I think McDavid is number two. I'm changing my answer. It goes Mahomes one, McDavid two, Scheffler three.
Good argument against yourself.
Quick break, then Haley Salvian to do NHL awards. So I'm obviously a homer. Like, I do a show called Leafs Talk. They didn't give me that job because they thought, you know, this guy, he's just whatever. Actually, they kind of probably did. Now that I think about it, now that I'm talking this through, I really don't know what the qualifications are for you to get a job like that. But yeah, it's pretty clear that I grew up cheering for the Toronto Maple Leafs and I care about them. And while I don't look at the players the way that I did when I was a kid, which was, oh man, these are my boyhood heroes, right? Like when I met Curtis Joseph, I got weak at the knees because I was like, oh my God, he meant so much to me. You don't know what I said. That's like embarrassing. Like now, I don't care at all about the players. Like they don't move me in any kind of way. It's like, yeah, you're just, you represent the team and it's very different. The fandom has changed. Mostly now I root for the Leafs because, man, I want to see the city so happy. I want to see the fan base rewarded. I want to see generations of fans celebrate in a way that I think that they deserve because of just the tortured element of this team. But I admit it. Like I admit I have a rooting interest in the Toronto Maple Leafs. That said, when I went into my fake ballot, my fake award ballot, because God knows they would never give me this kind of honor, I think that there's a really strong case for certain Toronto Maple Leaf for two different awards, but particularly one of them. I will also say that I'm being dead honest here. Like when I'm getting into this segment, I actually feel as though in general, because I am a homer, and I think a lot of homers do this, or homers who don't want to just fully be homers, is that they try to lean against the thing that they're most familiar with because they go, well, I don't want to seem like I'm being biased. And I genuinely think that is what is happening here this year with the Hart race. I think that is genuinely what is happening around the hockey community, because when you look at everything down and you look at it in black and white, Austin Matthews should be winning the Hart Trophy this year. And it's actually pretty conclusive. Anyways, I'm going to try to convince a actual voter of this take today. It's Haley Salvian, the excellent hockey writer for The Athletic. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
I feel like I hope they don't steal my ballot away or like take it away if they think I'm being swayed on the radio by noted Leafs fans.
Isn't that okay. The way that this is supposed to go, though, is that you take in all the information and then you analyze it and you go, this is good or this isn't good. And then, you know, you've got the brain. They entrusted you, right? You're like a judge. They're like, we trust you because of all of your experience to hand out this sentence, regardless of what other people think, you know?
Listen, every year this is my fifth year voting on NHL awards, I think.
Congrats.
Which is like very cool. I love it. Mm-hmm. But every single year, I get an email from either Emily Kaplan or Frank Cervelli or Chris Johnson saying, hey, your ballot's not in yet. Like, everything good? I'm like, I am taking all the time. Like, it is due at 5 Eastern. I will send this in at 4:45.
I love that.
It's not to be rude. It's not because I'm lazy or procrastinating. It's that, like, this stuff really does matter, and I do feel like I always need to take, like, a really long time to decide, and this year's a tough one. I feel like I will say that I have waffled on my considerations, but I've been pretty consistent in picking Nathan MacKinnon in my fake ballots for the last while here, but I have waffled a lot in like the process to getting to that. So I'm curious to hear your pitch.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me just ask you this. Cause one, I actually love that you put this much time and attention into it. And that's why I wanted to have you on because I do think that some people just want to check the boxes and they're like, oh yeah, what are you saying? Like that there's not a real, and I'm not trying to take a shot at anybody. I think this is just human nature. Like you just said, you're a busy hockey writer. Sure. There's a lot of people with stuff on their plate. And then they look at these awards and like, what's everybody saying? Like, yeah, okay, whatever, MacKinnon. And I feel as though that's been a little bit of this season because there are multiple candidates. Like you look at the guys that are going to get left off the ballots, right? That aren't even going to crack the top five. Like Panarin hasn't even been discussed this year. Like you can't even mention his name. And people will like laugh you out of the room. It's like, look at his year. It's pretty incredible.
Sidney Crosby too. He's one of the ones I've talked about too. Like, I don't think if the Penguins make the playoffs, then Crosby's the one that maybe gets
a
fifth place vote or like a Quinn Hughes. I think I saw there was a lot of talk of like, why is Quinn Hughes not getting any Hart Trophy love? And it's because the top 3-4 guys are getting all the attention. Connor Hellebuck, Roman Josi. Yep. There's a lot of good individual and valuable performances in the NHL this season. And I think picking the winner is going to be hard, but then also like rounding out that top five is going to be just as difficult too.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really fun exercise this year. And so maybe by the end of this, you can kind of give me the top five. I have mine in the order and I'm pretty set on it now. I don't think much is going to change my opinion. I guess like, the Sid making the playoffs thing is sort of something, but it's for a fifth place, not for anything higher.
Yeah.
And I do think that we love Sid so much and what he's doing at his age, we're almost giving him like bonus points because I'm like, yeah, well, look at what Panarin's team has done. And yet we, you know, he's lower, or Pasternak, and he just feels lower yet with the public consensus. But let me ask you this before we get into the case. Is this the hardest you've done it in your 5 years in terms of actually picking this award?
Yeah, I would say so. I was trying to think back of the Hart trophies that I've voted on in the past. And I know like when MacKinnon won his Hart trophy, that was an easy one. I'm pretty sure the year that Dreisaitl won his Hart trophy, that was an easy one. Last year was McDavid. Like that was an easy one. I think last year's Norris was actually really difficult. And the year before that, I find the Norris trophy to always be really complicated.
That's impossible.
For me. And so I think, all the years are just confusing. I think last year was the year that Carlson won. I voted for Carlson because I think, and this is where I think a lot of us who vote, and me specifically with a vote, can sometimes contradict myself because I looked at what Erik Karlsson did and was like, statistically, like, nobody's done that in years. And so it's like, well, I'm going to go with Erik Karlsson. And then, you know, we have a year like this with Austin Matthews. It's like, he might score 70, but I'm still leaning on Nathan MacKinnon. So you would think I would take the same approach in terms of stats and history, but I think it's different every year. But I know the year that Cale Makar won, I actually voted for Roman Josi. And Josi had more first place votes, I believe, but Makar won. So I find the Norris to be more complicated than the Hart over the last few years, but this year's Hart Trophy is definitely the hardest.
Yeah, I'm not going to do Norris with you today, and I'm not going to do, well, yeah, I think actually Vezina is a pretty simple one.
I'll have a panic. So
yeah, no. That's it. We're going to keep it very simple today. I'm basically going to talk to you about two awards, okay? This is my feeling about the MacKinnon thing. I think that for the vast majority of the season, MacKinnon was the leader for the Hart Trophy. It's like McDavid started slow. His team was actually winning. His line was dominant. He was having a great blend of goal scoring and primary assists, and all this thing was happening for him. And he went, hey, you know what? MacKinnon is the guy. Plus, he's never won a Hart Trophy. And now people are kind of looking at it in a very tight field and saying, man, he put together such a good year. And there are some holes, hilariously enough, in McDavid's resume, despite having 100 assists yesterday and joining, you know, just Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr. And with Austin Matthews, he's already won one. And when they went head-to-head, maybe MacKinnon was better than Matthews in one of the matchups, like by a pretty sizable degree. But again, Matthews has won, and we're kind of trying to decide what's more important, 100 assists or, 70 goals, even though, again, two guys are going to do it this year because Kucherov's going to get his. Kucherov also has a Hart Trophy, and his team is the lesser of them all. Plus, he's got the most power play points. And I sort of feel like in a difficult field where there's really strong cases, to me, strongest cases for three guys, and that's Matthews, McDavid, and MacKinnon. I view everyone else quite a bit a step below. Like, if you look at the percentage of the points that Kucherov has on the power play versus what he's done 5-on-5, it is massive, and I can't ignore it. I don't want to say that power play points are worth nothing. Obviously, they are. It's an incredible feat that he's going to do this. But of all the top four guys, to me, his year, his season has been the least impressive, and he's got the worst record on his team, which, whatever. In a tight season, I'm going to look at those things. But if you look at Austin Matthews now, right, after the entire thing, where do you have him on your Selke ballot? Is he top three? Is he top four? Like, just roughly, like, right now, if you were doing it. You would agree that he's in the conversation, right?
Selke or Hart? Sorry.
Selke. No, I'm just saying, like, is he in your Selke conversation to you? No, this is about
for
the
Austin
Hart Trophy.
Matthews.
This is about the Hart Trophy, but I just want to know if he's in the mix for you, like, if you're even considering him.
That's okay.
We'll get into the details of it, but just so it's a yes or no, you don't think he's top five?
He is maybe a consideration, but I will get into that more. I think he ends up being in the top five. However, there's like an extra little consideration that I'll make to you when we talk about it. He's in my thought process.
Okay, so we all agree that Austin Matthews, though, right now, this season is one of the best defensive forwards in all of hockey. And if you actually look at like the fancy stats, they show you that he has some of the hardest matchups, and if not the hardest matchups, out of any one of the guys that's being considered for the Hart Trophy. Like, he plays the toughest minutes. he has played with multiple different line mates, and some of which are not nearly at the caliber of what Nathan MacKinnon has had all season long. So I look at that and I'm like, okay, this, if we're going to do the expected goals for MacKinnon's line, then I want to know about the matchups and I want to know about who you're playing with. You look at goals, Matthews' primary points percentage, he's got 34 more primary points, 5-on-5, than Nathan MacKinnon, who also happens to be 18 goals behind Austin Matthews. Matthews is about to do something potentially that hasn't been done since the 1990s. I'm just looking at all of this and saying, okay, so you're telling me we've got a guy who has this many more goals. I think it's now 15 more than the next closest guy in the NHL, right, from a goal-scoring standpoint. We know that he does it all at 5-on-5, like almost primarily does it at 5-on-5. We know that he only has two of these goals that are empty netters. We know that he's getting the hardest matchups for his team and that he's his team's most important defensive player and actually in the Selke conversation. And we're going to ding him because he doesn't have nearly as many secondary assists as the other guys do. Like primary points percentage, the only guy higher is Connor McDavid. And so when I'm looking at this from just like a raw standpoint of who means the most to their team, all three of those guys are incredibly important. I can't do that one. But when I look at the stats, cold-blooded stats, the guy who's leading the league in goals, which we've all agreed is the most important of the stats, the guy who's second highest in primary points, the guy who's the most important defensive forward on his team, who's in the Selke running, I'm like, that's the guy. He's the Hart Trophy winner. And I can feel like the only reasons that we're against it is because it's so hard to split these dudes that people are just like, let's pick MacKinnon because we already decided on this a month ago and he's the best blend of it all and he's going to make the least people mad. Plus, he's never got one, so let's give it to him because it's a never got it year. Plus, if you give it to Toronto, boy, oh boy, are people going to be mad in a year like this? Your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think what's interesting about all this is, like, I actually think Austin Matthews, and I think this is what you're kind of getting at, is Austin Matthews is the most complete player of those three, right? And, or those three or four. And I think that is very interesting when we're talking about a guy who could potentially hit 70 goals, knock on wood, in the next, what, day here? They play the Florida Panthers tonight. So I think that's what really does give Austin Matthews an edge, is he does have the goals in terms of that kind of production. And he's critical to his team with and without the puck, right? Like, he does a lot of things that are very important. But I would say the reason for me looking at a Nathan MacKinnon is, and I don't mean this to say that Austin Matthews doesn't have the ability to score a highlight reel goal at an important time, but I think what gives Nate the edge for me and for a lot of people I've talked to about this is, like, you can literally see this guy just take over a game. Like, he has that pop that some of the other, and I'm, listen, Connor McDavid obviously has that too. Like, I don't want anyone to listen to this and say, do you even watch any of these other guys? But there's been so many instances this season where you can just, like, watch Nathan MacKinnon almost decide he's going to take over the game, and he does it himself. And it's not just the secondary assist for MacKinnon for me. It's the fact that he is, like, a dominant force when he's on the ice. And yes, he has guys like Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar on his team, but Nathan MacKinnon continues to stand alone above them. Right. And I think that's a really big part for me about him. And, he just pops. He may not have, I saw my colleague Dom Lustician made this great point. He had his awards watch today and he said MacKinnon doesn't have the best case in any one category, but he never has the worst. And, like, that's almost the argument for MacKinnon, is that he's, like, very good at everything in terms of points and goal scoring and his elite ability, his play driving. He's fine defensively. Like, he's not terrible in any way. So he provides value in every single way. But I think for me, it's just, like, the eye test more than anything is just watching Nathan MacKinnon, like, command a game and be so dominant. Despite the fact that, yes, he does have a lot around him, he still stands above the rest as, you know, just a completely dominant force on the ice.
Listen, I'm never going to try to discredit the Nathan MacKinnon because he is gorgeous to watch. And again, in one of the head-to-head matchups with Matthews this year, which should matter in a race this tight, he kicked his teeth in to the point where his coach, like Matthews's coach, noted it and went public with basically his disappointment in the gap between the two. But that does sound like Nathan MacKinnon is more aesthetically pleasing than Austin Matthews, yeah. because it's like Matthews.
Yeah, it's like you watch him and you're like, oh my God, he's like the coolest man or the craziest man, the coolest man on the ice, right?
Right.
Like, that's, I think that makes it, and I think when you watch that sometimes you can, you know, that ends up looking like, wow, look at the value. Like I can just see him dominating this game. Like I don't have to look into much else. It's just like, oh my God, he just took over the game. Like that's value.
Yeah.
And like, maybe that's not the best, most scientific way to go about a Hart Trophy, but when everyone's so close, this is going to be one of those ones where you just, I think, have a lot of people going with like, this is just what I think, or this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. Right. Because all the stats have them so close.
Yeah, but I guess that's kind of where I'm driving at, though, is like I don't think that the stats are that close because the goal scoring thing. Like, again, Matthews being at potentially 70 goals and Reinhart being the next closest guy at 55. Like, when we're talking about value, right? So if mm-hmm. he ends up with close to, you know, what, 15 goals more than his next closest guy, or let's put it even better because it's versus MacKinnon here in this regard. If he finishes with 20 goals more than MacKinnon, essentially, what is the value of a 20-goal scorer? Like, that's when, like, these are some 20-goal scorers in the NHL right now.
Yeah,
like,
but he has 50, though. But that's the thing. Like, MacKinnon has 50. Like, mm-hmm. I know that Austin Matthews has way more, but, like, Nathan MacKinnon scored 50 goals and 138 points mm-hmm. through 81 games. Like, that is also a crazy stat line.
Matthews has more primary points, though.
130, like, the power play matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Fine.
Like, how many times had the power play gone stale in Toronto and everyone's like, fire everybody, mm-hmm. we need to make this work because the power play sucks. Like, the power play matters.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, I know primary points and 5-on-5 points and all that stuff matters, but I don't know. I don't know.
I just think, like, when I'm looking at the list of guys who are 20-goal scorers, and it's like, and I know that some of these guys are, like, defensive forwards, was like, yeah, that's Logan Cooley, Anthony Cirelli, Braden Schenn, Troy Terry, Oliver Bjorkstrand, Pavel Zacha, Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah.
Like, the added 20 goals to me matters more than secondary assists and power play assists. Like, especially when we're looking at it this tight. And, yeah, I every time I looked at this, I felt MacKinnon, too. All year long, I went MacKinnon because, also, who doesn't like Nathan MacKinnon? Like, who doesn't feel as though he, like, embodies a hockey player with the competitive edge, the way that he carries himself? He's, like, the next Nova Scotia guy, which I think we all kind of weirdly enjoy as Canadian hockey fans. We're like, ooh, there's like this cool lineage and legacy here. He certainly deserves one. I think it would be very strange to have a year without MacKinnon looking at all the Hart Trophy winners and never seeing his name there. But when I go through this all kind of raw, like the only cases for MacKinnon, it's like, okay, his line has the best expected goals for 5-on-5 out of all these groups. But again, they play some of the weakest matchups. Plus, he does have the best line mates, like conclusively out of all these guys that we're talking about at the top tier. He's got the most shots. So I'm like, okay, you got the most shots. That is a valuable statistic to me. Like, you are driving play and you are peppering it on net. And then you've got the 50 goals and the points, but you're not the top point getter and you're not the top goal leader. I don't know.
I think Matthews has better line mates than, like, Austin Matthews played, what, 56% of his games with Marner. Mm-hmm. Like, MacKinnon's playing with Drouin and Lehkonen right now. I think Marner's better than Jonathan Drouin.
No, I think it's close, though. I think it's like, no. I know. Yeah. Listen, I just think if you look at his, like, but that's his, what percentage of the season are those two guys playing with him?
Yeah, I mean, he probably played a big chunk with Mikko Rantanen.
Yes.
It's a tough one. I really do think it's close. Like, it's down to MacKinnon and Matthews for me. Like, I think it ends up being McDavid, then Kucherov.
Yep.
I think I was giving Kucherov a lot of credit for having, like, way more points than the next best player on his team. But I do think at the top two right now, it comes down to Matthews and MacKinnon, and I still keep leaning on Nathan MacKinnon. Even though Matthews does have more primary points, I do just think the value from Nathan MacKinnon this season's been unbelievable. And I know, like, it's just so funny, like, that this is the debate and we're talking about, well, he has like 19 more goals than MacKinnon. It's like, yeah, but MacKinnon scored 50. Like, we're not talking about a guy who has 15 goals or 18 goals. It's 51. And but that is a credit to Austin Matthews that we can look at Nathan MacKinnon being a scrub for only scoring 50 goals this season. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, he had like 20 less than this guy. So I don't know.
No, that is the why.
It's going to be an interesting debate.
Yeah, that is why I do have McDavid third as well. Like, if the award is best player, then it's still McDavid. Like, he is the best player in hockey.
He's going to win every year. That's it. Boring.
And so I do feel like he suffers a little bit from, I don't want to say voter fatigue with him, but just, if you were a voter, I can't help but think like, hey, we should reward the guy who had the best year, not the best player every time. Because, yeah, otherwise it would be McDavid. And I'm sorry. He did get a coach fired, and he does have only 31 goals. Like, those two things should matter. As great as the assists are and as incredible it is to be with that company, the fact that another guy did it this season does, and a winger who did it, and another just, you know, future Hall of Famer, one of the best players in the game, it does knock it down just a slight tier for me, like a little slight tier of excitement for me. I think it's between those
voter
two guys.
Fatigue is definitely a real thing. I just have to say.
How could it not be?
We always go on our podcast. Sean Gentile always brings this up whenever we talk about the McDavid factor, and he's always just like, "Shaq won one MVP. Like, don't tell me that like voter fatigue isn't a thing when like in basketball, like what Kobe won four, and I know that's still a lot, but like you're telling me that he was only the best player in the league four times. Shaq was only the best player in the league once. Like, it's a real thing when you look at hoops.
That's always my
comparison.
It's so big in basketball that people don't want to vote for Nikola Jokic this year because he'll end up with three MVPs and that puts him in such historic company. And it's like, yeah, but you're now punishing this guy for mistakes of the past for exactly that. Like you're punishing him for other guys' voter fatigue when we know that, others should have actually won that award. So I think it's natural to say, hey, we want to get Nathan MacKinnon a harder. It makes more sense to try to give him a heart for this season. I actually think that sort of happened with Matthews when he won his, that it was, hey, Matthews is never going to have a season like this again. He's never going to take one for McDavid again. So maybe we give him the slight lean on this one. I actually think that he's far more deserving of heart this year, even in this loaded field, than he was that year versus McDavid. Like, that's how strongly I feel about this after I was like looking at it. I just can't help but get rid of that thought, which is, okay, you got the toughest matchups out of everybody. Mm-hmm. You've scored by far the most goals. And you're the best, you're considered the best defensive forward of the bunch. Like, you're the most complete player of them all. I'm like, what are you supposed to do? If one guy was on a team where they had won marketably more games, right? Like, if either of those guys was on a team that was going to win the President's Trophy, I would say, like, you know, here's this and fine. Like, we'll put a little bit of emphasis on team success. But I do just feel like the only cases for these guys are points totals. And then when we look at it, it's like, yeah, but which guy would you rather have? The guy that scores 70 goals or the guy that gets the extra points? And it's like, I don't know. I feel like we've done goal scoring. Like, that's what we've always come to.
That's the thing, though. Like, I would take a long time to decide if I wanted Nathan MacKinnon or Austin Matthews on my team. Like, I really like the way that Nate plays.
I think that Nathan MacKinnon is a better player than Austin Matthews.
Right. So it's like when you're trying to decide, like, who do I want on my team right now? Or who is the most valuable player? Like, it really does become like, what is your preference? Do you want the 70 goals, or do you want the guy that like, who's just like all power, right? Like, that's what I think of when I watch MacKinnon. Like, he is more eye catching. He is very valuable at 5-on-5, and he's a dual threat. Like, he can transition the puck really well. He generates scoring chances off the rush, off the cycle. He does have a great shot too. So I think it really does come down to preference. Mm-hmm. Do you want the guy with the wicked release that goalies haven't been able to figure out yet? Or do you want the guy who, just looks like a beast when you're watching him? Mm-hmm. And I think it will just come down to preference more than stats this year, honestly. Like, I think it's going to come down to who watches who more and who like appreciates what game more and like what value they end up kind of identifying to that. And I'm still like, yeah, I'm stuck. I feel like I've been going with MacKinnon because I've just been doing fake ballots, you know, for like predictions. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go with Nate. Because I do wonder if this ends up being a thing where people end up voting for MacKinnon because it is like, well, yeah, Austin Matthews won one. And I guess Nate lost the year that Dreisaitl won. I think I got confused. I think I voted MacKinnon the year that Dreisaitl won, or maybe it was a different year.
No, I think that was the year. I think that was the year.
I was trying to find all my ballots, and I couldn't. I only found the ballot from last year.
Yeah. No, that's the 2020 season. I'm pretty sure that was the year where it was between the two of them. I could be wrong. We could have our guys fact check that one, but I'm pretty sure you're right that is the same one.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And I can see that I voted that year, but I can't see what the ballot is. But I found last year I voted for McDavid. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is.
So I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. I do wonder if Nate wins, because I do think like a lot of people just like him. Mm-hmm. But I also know that it's going to be funny to see like if Matthews wins, a lot of people are going to say it's like East Coast bias, it's Leafs bias, instead of just saying like, no, this dude scored either 69 or 70 or 71 goals, whatever he ends up finishing at. And he is also like a strong defensive forward. Like, again, I said, like, I think right now, I think Nathan MacKinnon is the most valuable player, but I also think that Austin Matthews is the most complete player. And mm-hmm. that is what I'm trying to reconcile with.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, if Austin's the most complete, wouldn't he be the most valuable?
Yeah.
So that's the internal debate right now.
I hope it continues. I hope you continue mm-hmm. to go closer to Matthews after today. Here's what I really don't understand, and this is the part of it where I go, okay, I think it is some of the voter fatigue, and I do think that it is the there's part of MacKinnon to me that is a safer choice. In the era of just like public ballots and in such a tight race, I think like he is basically being politically neutral, right? Like you're Switzerland. Like, I'm not picking McDavid. I'm not saying that 100 assists matters more. I'm not saying that 70 goals matters more. I'm not picking one of these two rabid fan bases. I'm not weighing into the Kucherov thing. I'm just picking MacKinnon. I'm neutral. I pick that guy. And it's like, he is the safe choice. Like, he is the safest choice. Matthews, I think, is the boldest choice, but also the correct choice. What I can't get over is, like, the betting odds. You look at it, and it's like, MacKinnon is now a heavy favorite to win this award. Kucherov is 2. McDavid is 3, and Matthews is 4. And I'm like, no, this doesn't... Like, that's where it just doesn't compute to me, and that's where I do feel like there is some politics and some voter fatigue and some, as much as people think there is Leafs bias, I think that it also works against them at times like this as well. That's my last thing.
Yeah, because it's people who hate the Leafs and they don't want to vote for the Leafs.
Yeah, or they don't want to be seen as homers voting for the Leafs, because if you're from here and you vote for him, the assumption is, oh, all you do is watch the Leafs. But no, that's not you. Mm-hmm. That's me. That's me, the guy who does the radio show, not the actual national hockey writers. Does 70 actually make a difference for you? Like, if he doesn't hit that number and it is 69... do you think that actually
what
will,
a bum.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, but it's weird to think about this. Like the Crosby up to fifth thing makes a lot of sense from a playoff standpoint, right?
Yeah,
like
for sure.
To vote for him top five this year, no playoffs seems a little crazy to me, but does one goal mean that much? Do you think that could actually sway voters?
I think it does, because it would be like, everybody loves a round number. Everybody loves like a piece of history, mm-hmm. you know, even though they're also like, when was the last time anyone scored 69 goals? You know, like
correct.
It really doesn't make a difference, but I do think there's going to be people who see the pretty round number and go, oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah.
70. Wow.
It's pretty.
Or 69 is like, oh, you just missed 70. Like it's a weird mental thing, yeah. right? I don't think it makes a difference for me. But it's so crazy. I remember we did an episode of the hockey show, over at the Athletic several weeks ago. And it was like, basically, we did a whole thing because Matthews had hit 60 or no, he'd hit like 50 or something. And it was just like we had this big conversation of, can Austin Matthews hit 70 goals? And like, oh, yeah, it was the fastest U.S. born skater to score 50 goals in a season. And we did a deep dive into it. And I said something like, if he scores 26 goals in the last 28 games, like he's going to hit 70 or like, he'll be on pace to hit 70. And one of the commenters was just like, that's a really good season for normal dudes in the NHL. It's like scoring 26 or scoring 30. Mm-hmm. And here we were for a large chunk of the season being like, if Austin Matthews only scores 20 more goals, he can hit 70. And that's just like the crazy scoring pace he's been on. But I do wonder if people, if he hits like that flat number of 70, I do think he'll end up getting some more juice again. Because I do think people vote based on, like, for me, when I voted for Erik Karlsson, it's like, well, he's the only defender to have hit 100 since da-da-da, or Roman Josi had a great productive season, or, you know, Connor McDavid's different because he scored at such a crazy pace last year, but I do think people like those kind of historic round numbers for sure.
Yeah, you're talking
but
about...
But I think if you think 70 is better than, 70 is better than 60, but if that's your swing vote, that's That's stupid. Respectfully.
I know. But yet I kind of do feel as though it is real. And yeah, when you're talking about like the difference in that, you know, 26 goals, it's like, yeah, I think we would both agree that Matthew Barzal is like a really good hockey player. He's like top 30 in shots this year. He's, you know, very good. He's got 23, you know, like Barzal has 23 goals.
Right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Like Jack Hughes has 27 goals. Like, it's just there's yeah.
Yeah, but he was hurt this year.
Sure. Yeah.
Boo. Yeah. Tomato.
Yeah, right. Fine.
I refuse to allow Jack Hughes hate. Whatever.
I'm just saying. What did he play? 65 games? He played enough. Anyway, let's move to the Selke thing because, yeah. Oh, by the way, last Matthew stat is just plain and simple, just in terms of like the historical number of the 70, because we're all waiting for it for the 90s. It's like, yeah, his 51 even strength goals has only been done by 7 guys ever in NHL history and hasn't happened in over 30 years. So, yeah, we've already kind of hit the Matthews historical stuff. But I guess, yes, the 70 thing, I really do think it matters when it comes to voting and the way that you're selling the case. Okay, so let me just start with this. How do you interpret the Selke now? Because it feels like a cumulative award that now includes scoring more so than it did, like, you know, 5-6 years ago. Like, what does the award mean to you? What are the check marks for you?
I mean, I look at the Selke as the way it should be in the sense of like the best defensive forward, but I do think it's, as you said, it's definitely gotten more into like who's the best guy who scores and is also not bad on defense.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be really tricky to measure because I do think it's tough to interpret for a lot of people, right? Like, because I think if the Selke was just being voted on by like a team's or a player's defense, like we'd be talking more about like Eriksson Ek, or I think Kopitar will be getting more love, or if Philip Deneau would be getting more love. Like, we'd be looking at guys who don't produce as much, but they are very solid on the defensive side of the puck. And I mean, but instead we're talking about, and look, all that being said, I think this has been Barkov's award to win all season, like, or his to lose, really. I think Barkov's been unbelievable on both sides of the puck, but his defensive rating has been the best in the NHL all season. So I'm not looking at Barkov and saying like he's getting the benefit of being a good point producer as well, because like the defensive numbers are there. But I do just think like if we were looking at it as a strictly defensive thing, then maybe there might be some guys who just don't have as many points getting more consideration. Shayna Goldman always does a story every year where she basically gets people talking about like, what does the Selke mean? And a lot of guys are just like, I don't know anymore. Right. Yeah. Like, I remember talking to Rod Brind'Amour about this 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, and I was still in Calgary, and I was talking about Elias Lindholm. And it was just like, is he somebody who could win a Selke one day? Like, what does the Selke even mean, basically? And I think he was looking at it of like, you know, a Jordan Staal is like the perfect kind of core Selke type guy, right? Like, he produces well, he plays against top competition, he's used in all situations, he PKs, he takes defensive zone faceoffs, like all of those different things that are important to the defensive side of the game and add value on the defensive side of the puck he provides. So I think that's kind of like the important parts for me, right? Like, if I'm looking at someone and they don't PK, or all of their faceoffs are in the offensive zone, or they're playing against teams third lines, like that's not a Selke trophy contender for me, regardless of, you know, their point production playing against second lines. I weigh the quality of competition above anything else with the Selke conversation, and if they penalty kill and things like that. So, I mean, the Selke for me right now is it's for Barkov. And I would say when I am going about, like, if there's a tiebreaker, or I'm going about who makes it in the fifth spot, or where I'm ranking people, it comes down to, who would I rather have in the D zone on the faceoff in like a one goal game or a tie game? Like, you're defending a lead, or you need to win the faceoff and get the puck out. Like, who would you rather have on the ice in that moment? And I think that's kind of the big way that I kind of try to wade through some of the names on the Selke trophy list.
I love that test.
And I remember this was a big thing when Marner got final five in the Selke. And I think Mitch Marner was good on the PK that year. I think mm-hmm. he was a good defensive player that year. But I do know that was one of those things where, like, I don't think Jordan Staal was Final Five. I don't think Kopitar was Final Five. And it was one of those moments for me where, like, it was an exec who actually brought that up. And it was like, you're telling me you'd rather have Mitch Marner on in the D zone in an important moment in the game than like a Kopitar, like really? And I think that's what kind of stood out to me is like, that's kind of the best way to be looking at this, right? Like when you're deciding who gets your fifth spot, because I do think Marner ended up being someone people were like, he had a really good defensive year. Let's throw him a bone. Like,
yeah,
he finished he's on third. My ballot number five, yeah. right? Or number four, people are just throwing Mitch Marner in there. Because he had a good season, but then it was one of those things of like, I would probably rather have Jordan Staal on in that moment or yeah. a Kopitar or a Teravainen. So I don't know. I think it goes different every year, and that's not to discredit Marner because, again, he did have a really good defensive season that year. Like, he was on my ballot. I think I had him like fifth on my Selke ballot. So I'm, you know, dunking on myself here a little bit. Not even because, again, he was good that year, but that's kind of the way that I've handled the Selke is who would I rather have on in this moment? Because that's where defensive value is really the most important.
I think that's a really good test. But yeah, there's a lot of players. Like, yeah, you'd rather have Deneau on the ice than Mitch Marner to close a hockey game. But yeah. Now it's clear that it has become.
But there's also nothing wrong with voting for Mitch Marner because he was very good that season.
Yeah,
right?
No, like, there's no doubt. There's no one saying that it's like a bad thing to do. But I will say this is now I feel like, and I talked about it with Merrick a few weeks ago of like the evolution of this award and what are supposed to be the boxes that we're supposed to tick and what we're actually supposed to know? Like, what is mm-hmm. it that we have to have? And now it seems like it is the, to me anyway, the most complete center who also scores. Like, you know, it's, you are the most complete yeah. center, but that it is also a reputation award that you have to have it cumulative. Like oh, you said, the Kopitar yeah. thing where it's like, you got to be years of Kopitar to be that where you go, well, who would you rather have, Mitch Marner or Kopitar? And then that ends up being something for someone. So I actually yeah. don't think Matthews should win this award. I think that I'm with you on this. It is Barkov's. I also think that the other component I didn't mention is I think it should be a little bit of a team award. Like, I've seen people try yeah. to mention that Matthews is actually more deserving of this because he plays on the lesser defensive team, which means he means more to them. I'm like, yeah, no, I'd rather... Like, if you're doing all things equal, I do think that you should give it to the team that really does feel like they can lock it down. And the best guy on the lockdown team, that means something to me. So it is Barkov's
yeah,
award.
Sure.
What I think is good for yeah. Matthews is that this is actually a step in the right direction for him in terms of someday being at least mentioned consistently in that award and also kind mm-hmm. of keeping that company. Because mostly when you look at a goal scorer of his caliber, you think, oh, you know, he's like Ovechkin, where... he's a liability defensively. Like, he's going to end up being a minus for you in that yeah. zone. And it's just so, so, so not the case. And probably the thing that hurts Matthews the most, like, to keep him from being, I would think, number two, because I think there's a pretty strong case he could be two, is that he's only played 15% of the penalty kill minutes in comparison to the other guys, which play a lot closer to half. But it's not none. Right. And I am curious that for a guy like that, who even as good as he is 5-on-5, if moving forward they get a little bit more tempted to use him in some of those roles a bit more, and whether that does become a bit of an evolution of his game. But either way, like, yeah, I think you've landed on a pretty good place in terms of like the way that you've broken down your checklist.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting too because like when you talk about the defensive system, I think people. I do wonder if there was like voter fatigue in the sense of like, I'm sick of voting for guys in the Carolina Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So like, I am going to put like, again, to go to the Marner situation, because that was just last year and I just pulled up my Selke ballot. He was fifth for me. So, because again, the numbers were there, but I do wonder if there are people who are like, I'm sick of voting for Rod Brind'Amour players. Like, we get it. He was the Selke guy. His team's really good defensively, like whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not actually that Jordan Staal's good defensively. He just plays for Rod Brind'Amour. But again, Jordan Staal's been excellent defensively. So I do think he's somebody that gets on my ballot. It's just, where does he rank? And I think the interesting conversation this year is Sam Reinhart's having a really good season offensively mm-hmm. and defensively. And I think the question is he just playing good defensive? Is he just have good defensive numbers because of Barkov? Or like, I always struggle with having two players from the same team on ballots for things. Cause it's mm-hmm. like, well, are they as valuable if there's two of them doing it?
That's
why I think struggle. That's why like Leon Dreisaitl's, you know, never going to get as many Hart Trophy votes as he probably should, because he plays in a team with Connor McDavid. So I'm curious to see what happens with Sam Reinhart. I haven't really gone through that process in my brain yet. I do think Kopitar has been like really solid defensively this season too. Adam Lowry's had a good defensive season. He's one of those guys whose like offensive rating is like not good, but he's been a very good, like a very solid defensive player. So I wonder if he gets on ballots. And then, yeah, Austin Matthews. I just pulled up Dom's trophy watch that came up today just because he'll put the defensive rating right on here. And I'm lazy and I don't want to pull up all these individual cards myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Matthews in terms of like just defensive rating is fourth behind Reinhardt, Barkov, Seth Jarvis. So yeah, he's fourth. Mm-hmm. Higher defensive rating than Jordan Staal. I think Jordan Staal has a higher quality of competition, but it's going to be interesting.
I think so too.
I like voting on the Selke, actually. It's like one of the more fun ones. I think the Selke, the Hart, and the Norris are the fun ones. I hate the Lady Bing.
I'm sorry.
I just have to say it. I need to use this platform to say that.
You think anybody likes the Lady Bing? It was an embarrassing thing for Leaf fans when Alex McGillney won it, and it was like their only individual award in like God, my lifetime and beyond. And it was like, oh, cool that he won that thing. No. I don't think anybody actually wants.
Yeah, it's just like
to win it.
But I don't know why we're supposed to vote on that, because it's like the most gentlemanly player and it just turns into people looking at like points versus PIMS. It's like, are you actually a gentleman? I don't know you.
So. You should have a test. You guys should all run like basically a bachelor for the final few contestants and have them see who is most gentlemanly to everybody around them.
I'm just going to ask to go on the road and I'm going to walk into 15 different locker rooms and say, hi, nice to meet you. And if they're rude, I'm going to be like,
lost the Lady Bing. Ouch. Tough.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Lost the Lady Bing in game 64 of the season. Was a little surly in an interview.
You were kind of mean to me.
Exactly. Yeah. Haley, thanks for doing this. Thanks for spending so much time. Good luck with your ballot. I can't wait to text you and bug you and ask you who you are voting for and try to make my final pitch. I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Quick break. Let's hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Okay, I don't have a lot of time here because I went long with Haley and long with Ben. Because they're two of my favorite people to talk to. So, yeah, surprise, surprise. I'm just going to wrap this up. I'm not going to wrap this up because I'll probably do this throughout the week. Some of you might even get sick of it. But here's the thing. The Hart Trophy, it didn't really bother me because all these guys are so deserving, right? So I was looking at it and going, everybody's deserving. And I will start it by saying this. I don't think that Austin Matthews is a better hockey player than Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon. If I was doing a draft and my life was on the line and I need to pick a couple of guys to win me a Stanley Cup, those two guys would go ahead of where I put Austin Matthews. Part of that is because we've seen MacKinnon do it in the postseason. You can say better team, weaker conference. I don't care. Whatever your excuse is, I'm telling you that in my heart, I believe Nathan MacKinnon is the better of the two hockey players when I've seen them play. That said, I think Austin Matthews is having the better season. I'm sorry. I really genuinely believe that we looked at this tight race and it got kind of ugly. And earlier on in the year, everyone had decided it was MacKinnon. Everyone was like, it's MacKinnon. And now we've gotten to the end and we're like, oh, well, I guess it should still be MacKinnon because we felt like it was this way. It's like, no, Haley just said it. I don't really know what defensive rating is, but Matthews is the fourth highest one, right? He's genuinely in the Selke conversation. He should be. If you look at strength of competition and what he does for his team, the minutes that he plays compared to those other stars, he has the hardest minutes out of anyone. And he's still going to score 70 goals. And it's all even strength. He's not a power play merchant, man. So you're telling me that one of the best five defensive forwards in the NHL who also scores 70 goals, 15 more than his peers, 15 more than the closest peer, isn't going to win the MVP this year? I'm sorry. That just doesn't add up. He's the guy. But we have the most voters that live in Toronto. And part of this is like straight up gatekeeping where it's like, well, you don't watch enough of this. And so it's like we're going to give it to the guy that the rest of you aren't watching enough. It's like, this isn't an award that's supposed to be given out on a career accomplishment. It's supposed to be who has the best season. And it's Austin Matthews. We'll see you tomorrow.